Being a Christian woman and walking in God's calling for our lives can be a difficult task. With the world and pop culture telling us to be one way, and the Bible saying another, you kind of end up feeling like an other. Well, you're not alone. Join me now and my friends as we navigate life in our 20s and 30s, while making sure we live out our faith, embrace our femininity, and looking cute. We discuss pop culture, life, careers, relationships, and so much more. Prepare to be entertained and educated. I know you're going to love it. Join our movement and embrace being another girl.
The views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not reflect our employers. Enjoy. Hello, everyone. You are listening to Those Are the Girls with Mallory and Friends. I'm Mallory, and today I'm super excited to welcome Emily. She is the founder, the co-founder, and the president of Let Them Live. So you have seen them on Instagram, you've seen them on TikTok, you know about them. But we're going to talk to Emily and get to know the company and Emily a little bit better. This is also our first episode of, or first interview of Life Month. And for those who do not know, we have designated January to be Life Month on the podcast. And the life issue is so important to us. This is a woman's podcast. And we are so, we think it's just really important that we understand our femininity and our fertility. And we support life because God has given us, we women, we're very blessed. God has given us the ability to bring life into the universe. And that is just an amazing thing. So we want to support that. We want to support our fellow sisters. And I really just want this month to be very informative and like for us to learn and to show different sides of the life issue for people who are not really in the pro-life movement. So you don't really know all that we believe. But this month you will. So I'm going to read Emily's bio real quick and then we'll get into it. So Emily is the president and co-founder of Let Them Live, a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to saving lives from abortion by financially supporting women in crisis pregnancies. She's been involved with the pro-life movement for over 8 years, and her great passion in life is giving pregnant women the support they need to choose life. Emily holds a bachelor's degree in biology from Colorado State University and met her husband, Nathan, the summer after she graduated. They started Let Them Live together 4.5 years ago and have grown to a team of over 40 staff and 200 volunteers that have helped over 600 women cancel their abortions and choose life. Emily and Nathan love working together and recently wrote a book about their experiences with Let Them Live that released September 1st, 2023. All right, everyone, welcome Emily to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel like this is so good that you read the bio because I need to update it. We are close to 900 babies. So this is I feel like it's so hard because I need to update that bio all the time, but I am so excited to be here and talk to you and, you know, share more about what we do and the work. And I love the theme of your podcast. I love that it's just so like, you know, positive feminism, you know, I just love it. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. I'm really excited too. The first question I have is, how did you come up with the idea of Let Them Live?
It's such a good question. And it kind of all starts with my husband, Nathan. You know, I've always been pro-life, and that's kind of always been core to who I am. And so it's kind of funny that Nathan, who actually used to be pro-choice, it was kind of through him that Let Them Live got started. It was just after we got married, and he was on Facebook late one night. He's a night owl, and it was about 3 a.m, and he sees in a pro-life group that there's a girl saying, hey, my cousin has an abortion scheduled and I don't know what to do about it. Can anyone give me advice? Can anyone help me out? So Nathan reached out to her and asked a bunch of questions and found out that she had an abortion scheduled because she was evicted. She was living in her car. It was freezing weather. And this was like December. So, you know, just peak freezing weather. Yeah. And she lost her job. She lost her kids. Like it was just really bad. And she was pregnant. And, you know, it was kind of in that moment where he realized this is just not acceptable. So long story short, we had just gotten married. We didn't have a whole lot of money. And I always joke that his heart is bigger than his brain. And so he offered her all the money that we had, which was money that we were given from our wedding. And it was about $1,200. And he asked, hey, like, if we got you back into your apartment, you know, we got you, like, what would it take? And she's like, yeah, it's going to be about $1,200. And we were like, Nathan looks over to me and he nudges me awake and he's like, hey, do you want to save a life from abortion? And I was like, yeah, like, of course you're going to say yes.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, like, what is this guy talking about? You know, like, he's not, he's lost it. Like, how do we do that? And he's like, okay, we got to empty our bank account, give her all the money we have. And I was like, okay, yeah. Like, there was just not even a thought about it. Because really, we knew that we'd be okay. We'd figure it out. But this mom really needed help in this emergency situation, right? She was days away from an abortion. So we did just that. We helped her cancel her abortion. She got that canceled. She sent us an ultrasound. And then that's really what sparked it for us. We had started Let Them Live prior to this, but we didn't really know what we were supposed to do. We had previously had experience with, like, you know, political stuff, and we tried different types of things with Let Them Live. But I knew just through prayer that God would reveal to us, like, what we were really supposed to do. And then this happened, and it was just like the light bulb went off. We started researching, and a majority of women in the U.S. have abortions because of financial burden. And we didn't know of any organization that was specifically fundraising for that, you know, specific issue. So we started doing it. We put it out to our friends and family. You know, we didn't have any more money, so we had to look elsewhere. And, you know, little by little, we started connecting with more and more moms, and the power of social media, we started to grow our team and people started to believe in it. And we started to, be able to just build Let Them Live. So that's where we're at today, almost 5 years later. So
that's an amazing story. It's crazy how God orchestrates things. You know, he'll always tell you what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. And it's so hard too, because, you know, there was a time when I was like, all right, God, like, if you want me to do this, I'll say yes. And it's like, I had no idea what I was like, agreeing. You know, like, we have been on the craziest adventure of our life, and there's been some really amazing highs and there's been some really low lows, and it's hard, you know, and sometimes when we say yes and we talk about God calling in our life, you know, it's easy to say, oh yeah, I'll do what God calls me to do. But when you're in it, it's like, oh, okay. I didn't realize that this was going to be so difficult. You know, you have to put aside everything that you ever wanted for your life, but I will say it is worth it every single day. So.
Amen. So you mentioned that you have always been pro-life. So you grew up pro-life. Was that because of, did you like grow up in the church? Like, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Also, sorry, I'm sniffling. It's just got over a cold. So
no, you're fine. It's, you know, late in the year, cold.
Yeah. So I grew up, Catholic, and, you know, I think the thing is it's just kind of always like a baseline that you're pro-life, but I don't know if it was just that it wasn't talked about in my family, or if abortion wasn't as much of a hot button issue, or if I just wasn't like old enough for it to be a hot button issue to me. But I never really like knew what abortion was. Like, I would tell people like, yeah, like pro-life, you know? But I even remember when I was in youth group in like middle school or something, we got these t-shirts, and it said, I survived Roe v. Wade. And I had no idea what that meant, but I wore it around. So that's kind of, you know, and so when I got to college, I just out of nowhere started thinking about abortion, and I was like, gosh, I should really like figure out why I'm pro-life. I should really be able to defend my position. So I started reading apologetics books, you know, Trent Horn, Persuasive Pro-Life. Like, I read books about abortion. I read all this. I started researching, and I was like, now I can fully say that I'm pro-life. If someone approached me, I wouldn't be confused, or I'm not really sure. And so something sparked in me. And when I was in college, I just really felt like this was a huge issue that had to be addressed. So I pretty much started, you know, I dropped my dream of being a veterinarian. I called my parents. I was like, I'm going to be a pro-life activist. I stopped going to class. I started doing activism on campus.
Oh, wow. You know,
I led a Students for Life club, and really just started getting into it. And, you know, I found that that was just really my path, and the passion just kind of took me into that. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it all started. And it honestly just went on a journey from there. And after I graduated, I met Nathan, and it all just kind of happened so quickly, you know?
Wow. Well, I love that. So my story is similar too, in the sense of like, I grew up pro-life, and like, I thought everyone was pro-life, really. And then I got to college and I had to make my belief my own instead of just like parroting things I heard other people say. So if you're listening and, you know, that's kind of your story, like you're pro-life because, you know, your family's pro-life, but you don't really know. I think it's so important for us, especially like by the time you get to college, or at least in college, for you to realize like, why are you actually pro-life? Because you're going to get people, at least at my college, you're going to get people who are going to disagree with you. And if you don't have like a genuine conviction, you're going to struggle when you have the conversation. So,
100%. It's so important. And with an issue as dire, I mean, literally life and death as abortion, we definitely owe it to, you know, the babies and their moms to be able to defend them eloquently and to be able to say like, you know, but the nice thing about being pro-life, and I will say this, is, you know, you don't have to do much digging to figure out why you're pro-life, because it's just wrong to kill people. And that's a perfectly fine, you know, response. And so even if it's just that, it's like, come up with, you know, everyone has their different reasons or stories, but it's like you said, it's super important to just have that knowledge, and it, educate yourself. You know, the videos about what abortion is and what it does, and, you know, you're able to have conversations and debates. You know, there's so many people that say, oh, late term abortions don't exist, but they sure do. And it's important if you know what that entails. So, it's really important.
Yeah. So back to Let Them Live. How does it all work? I've seen it on Instagram. You guys will post a picture of this person, or like Mom A is experiencing. How does it all work?
Yeah, it's such a good question, because Let Them Live, when we started it, you know, we really led Let Them Live digitally. That's how it all got started. And it's so different, because the typical model of support to pregnant women is the pregnancy center model, which is absolutely amazing. And it's that brick and mortar. It's, you know, maybe not a lot of social media presence. And so we kind of broke through that. And so it's a question we get a lot. It's like, how does this all even work? Because it is so digital. So we have our staff and our volunteers and everyone. We all work remotely. We're all over the country. We help women all over the US. We help women internationally as well. And we have a lot of women that come to us either, you know, through social media, because we have, you know, such a social media presence, but we also partner with pregnancy centers and other pro-life organizations and sidewalk counselors to make sure that all of the needs are being met for the moms. So if a mom is referred to us, or she finds us, she fills out an intake form, and we have a whole process for what we call triaging, which a lot of people would know that sounds familiar from the like emergency room. So if you go to the emergency room, you're going to get triaged. You know, if you come in and you have a broken ankle, but someone is bleeding from the head, they're going to get triaged and they're going to be taken care of first, because it's a more serious injury. So we kind of developed that into our program. So we have moms reach out to us and we sort of triage them. We decide, okay, who's the most emergency situation? Because that's how Let Them Live started. You know, it's that last minute, she's going to have this abortion. She doesn't know what to do. All other options are exhausted. Let's hop in there. So moms that are eligible for our support, you know, they have that abortion scheduled. They are really struggling. They're going to get triaged. They're going to get connected to a pregnancy counselor virtually. They're going to have a call. And that's the time for the mom to really share everything, what's going on in her life. You know, maybe the father of the baby is abusive, or he left her, or, you know, maybe she's married and they just don't have money, or whatever it is, and share all of everything that's going on. And then from there, our team, we have a whole financial team within our pregnancy counseling department that forms a financial plan for the moms, and that the moms sign off on. So it could be something, you know, it varies for every mom, because every mom has a different situation, but it varies. It could be, you know, we're going to pay for 6 months of rent and 4 months of car payments and 3 months of utilities. But we typically have a system where we taper off. And while we work with that mom, we help her with job resources, financial, you know, resources, financial coaching, budgeting, Dave Ramsey, Financial Peace University.
I love that. This is so good.
life coaching. You know, we have therapists that work with the moms because a lot of times there's trauma. So all of this is going on at the same time, and we're helping hundreds of moms all at once. So we have, it's pretty incredible. And so we help that mom. We raise that money. And we go to social media. You know, that's how we really started, was with crowdfunding. We have amazing programs. You know, we have our monthly giving where people give monthly, which is amazing. We have our church program, our adopt a mom program. So churches can, you know, band together and support a mom, adopt a mom. But most of our fundraising happens, you know, on our website, letthemlive.org. You can go and you can read the story about a real mom who has just come to us, who has an abortion scheduled, and read her story and see her needs and then donate to her. So it's really just a pro-life crowdfunding model. And then we go ahead and pay those bills directly to where they're due. So we don't, you know, just cut a check to a mom and say, here's $20,000. We pay those bills over time. And we make sure that she's, you know, getting back up on her feet.
That's good. I mean, this is such a good, I love this model because like you said, it's similar to what happens at pregnancy centers, which are great and absolutely needed. But there are places where the pregnancy center is kind of far, or there isn't one close, or sometimes, you know, no one's perfect. So I think it's good because we need this everywhere. We need, if women that are struggling need someone, and it's good to have a myriad of like options for them.
Oh yeah. 100%. I think you touched on something so important, and that's partnership. Sorry, you could probably hear my dogs.
That's okay.
Up, right? But that's the beauty of partnership that we need more of in the pro-life movement, because Let Them Live, we can't fulfill every single need, right?
Right.
A mom might need. A pregnancy center might not be able to do that. So a great example that I always use is, you know, pregnancy centers, they may not be equipped. We had a mom recently, she came and she had back rent, like $10,000 due for back rent. And luckily our CFO is also an attorney, so he's able to help, you know, kind of talk that down, but we have the financial resources to help that mom with that money. But a pregnancy center may not be equipped to do that. But what they are equipped to do that we're not is they have a physical location. They have a program where they can help the moms, you know, learn to parent. They can also give her material items, ultrasounds. We require ultrasound verification, you know, when we have a mom, and that's not something that we can do. So there's really no point in reinventing the wheel. It's all about what can each person or each organization in the pro-life movement provide, and we can just work together. So we're super collaborative. We love all of our partners. They do things we cannot do. We do things they can't do, and it's like real good synergy. So
I love that. I mean, we really need unity in the pro-life movement. One thing that I've learned through, I hate to say activism because I feel so cringe, but like one thing I've learned through my activism is that we all have different roles. And I've also learned to not be so like judgy, I guess, for lack of a better word, on everyone's role. Because sometimes you can get kind of high and mighty, like, well, I do this all the time and I don't see so-and-so doing this. But we all are called to do different things. I mean, the Bible even says that. We're all called to do different things. And it's so important for us to figure out what is that thing and then to just work together. Because once, you know, the point, eventually we would like to abolish abortion, but once abortion is abolished, we still have to change our culture. There are still going to be people who are going to try to get abortions. There's still going to be unplanned pregnancies that are going to need our help. And we need to work together for that.
100%. And there's a role too, where, you know, Nathan and I started Let Them Live, and we gave our time to Let Them Live, and we dedicated this, but there's some people who maybe their calling is to be a doctor or a lawyer, and they may not be able to give time, but they can give money.
Yep, exactly. So my next question is, how have things changed, or have you seen a change since the overturning of Roe?
Yeah, Roe v. Wade overturning was so, Roe v. Wade overturning was such an interesting thing, because the pro-life movement really, that was like the pinnacle. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was kind of like the peak, like, this is it. And if we achieve this, then like, that's it. And so I think it was really exciting for a lot of people. And I think it was definitely something that was an achievement. And I think I read something where, you know, like 30,000 lives have been saved because it was overturned. And I think that's amazing. I think a lot of pro-life people, again, like I said, they thought that was the peak. So once you hit the summit, it seems like everything else is kind of downhill from there. And so we noticed, you know, a drop off. There's a drop off in donations for a lot of organizations. There was a donor.
Really?
Yeah, right after Roe was overturned, I had a donor email me and he said, so what's Let Them Live going to do now? What's Let Them Live's mission going to be now that abortion doesn't exist anymore? And I was like, oh, that's concerning. And I realized that was a sentiment that a lot of people had was, well, I guess we don't have to do anything anymore. And so it was really challenging to just keep up the effort, keep up the activism, keep up the momentum, and help people to understand that although Roe v. Wade was overturned, there was other ways that abortion was happening. So you have the abortion pill, you have women, even in states where abortion is outlawed, they are ordering abortion pills to their home. They can literally be mailed directly to them. You have women that are traveling to other states and organizations like Let Them Live, but kind of on the other side of things, that were paying for abortions and paying for travel for abortions. So you basically just have even, we have even more of a duty now. And so our efforts ramped up. We had more women coming to us after Roe was overturned. We saw way more women. We are still seeing more women. We see a lot of more abortion pill related situations, which are harder to counsel on because, you know, like I said, women are ordering them right to their home and they're right there and they can just take them. So there's a lot of challenges for sure. But I think that we're kind of, myself and other pro-life leaders, we have really been very vocal about we've got to keep the gas, you know, on the gas pedal going.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I guess you're right. Those of us who were like in the movement, we were like, oh, this is great. Yay. Let's keep going. Cause we understood it's back in the States and they're going to fight, you know, as hard as they can. But I guess if you aren't in the movement or if you're just kind of like a passively pro-life, it didn't click for you. So hearing that the donors went down, that's actually, I guess I'm shocked, but I guess I shouldn't be too shocked because I guess people just did not know.
And it was across the board, you know, for many pro-life organizations. And I also think, you know, it was especially, you know, the older generation, because, you know, when people were around, you know, obviously I wasn't around in 1973 when Roe was overturned, but, you know, a lot of our parents or grandparents were. And so for them, that was pretty much like the center, which makes sense.
Yeah,
you know, that was kind of, so for it to be overturned, it probably felt to them like a weight maybe lifted.
Yeah.
And in some ways it was, maybe in some ways it wasn't. But it's definitely been encouraging to see so many young people, you know, really step up and just continue that. So,
yeah. Yeah. We have to continue to fight. Cause I mean, like you said, it's still happening.
Mm-hmm.
So can you kind of give a breakdown of the type of woman who reaches out to Let Them Live?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's actually really great you asked that because we do keep, you know, information about demographics and statistics and things like that. And on the moms that reach out to us, we see majority of moms are in their early 20s. So between 20 and 24, I believe it is. It's just, you know, early to mid 20s. We do have some, you know, girls who are in college, that type of thing. And we do see a larger amount of Black women. And that's actually a huge discussion piece to have that I think a lot of people shy away from. But the reality is it goes deeper than just this woman is, you know, having an abortion because of financial burden. It goes into what's the generational problems that people are facing, especially Black women, for example. There's fatherlessness, you know, there's so many things that are happening that can contribute to that. But we also see a really high percentage of white women as well. Honestly, that's the second highest. And so it's super interesting, but we see a lot of women who have some college, you know, it just wasn't the right time or whatever. But those women that are in that situation, we also have seen women who are, you know, victims of domestic abuse and domestic violence, sex trafficking, rape survivors. So we've seen pretty much just about everything that you could see with all the amount of women that have come to us. But really, we do see certain communities and certain ages being more prevalent. And that leads us to kind of dig deeper and say, you know, how can we help them, help their kids and the next generation kind of get out of that and you know, prepare the next generation for an even better life. And that's what we all want anyways, you know, yeah, for our kids, grandkids. But it's really been become a focus of mine of how do we provide that support and help them get back on their feet.
Yeah, that's really, I love statistics, or at least like hearing statistics. I could never take a course on it, but I like hearing people's statistics because I think it's so important to kind of like see what the issue is. And unfortunately, you know, Black women leading it is not surprising. And when we look even at the statistics, Black women make up only 12% of America, but I believe the statistic is like 33% of abortions. So there clearly is something going on, something not right. Yes. In that. And I think you are right on just kind of talking about like the generational things, because when you listen to women talk about it, a lot of times, well, my mom had one, my grandma had one, I guess it's not that big of a deal. And I do think that is something that should be addressed, which kind of is a good quick little plug. Black Woman Pro-Life is having a conference February 9th and 10th. Anyone listening, if you want to come, you do not have to be Black to attend the conference, but all the leaders that are going to be speaking are going to be Black. And one of the things that we are really trying to do with the conference is kind of just like show Black people that you can be pro-life, and kind of just how do we reach our community? So anyone can come. That's just a quick plug.
Yeah, that's so important too, because there needs to be more conversation about it. Like you said, you know, Black women make up a smaller percentage of the population, but why are the abortion numbers so high? And that's a concerning thing. I think anyone, regardless of your position on abortion, right, it raises red flags. And it's like, well, what can we do as people to figure out a solution, you know?
Yeah. It's like, what's the disconnect? Like, how did that?
Yep.
Yeah. So the next question is actually a Patreon question. So if you want to hear the answer to this, you can pay a minimum $5 to our Patreon. So this question is, how do you determine if someone truly needs help? So like I said, join the Patreon for $5 to hear that answer. Okay, so the next question is, can you tell us maybe one or two success stories that you're just like, this was a God thing, all the things were stacked against us and our baby's alive?
Yeah, well, I mean, a good example, I feel like it's for every, but this is just a handful of babies. So, you know, the success is, I love doing interviews like with this in my background, because it's just so a reminder, and this is our home, so this is just what we see all the time.
Oh wow, cute.
You know, we love all these babies, let them live babies. But I mean, there have been so many, but you know, the one that really comes to mind, and it's one that I share over and over again, and I'm sure everyone has heard it, but I'll just say it again. And I can't believe that this baby is going to be 4 years old in March. It's so crazy how time flies. And actually, the story I'm about to tell, it's about a little baby named Kiari, and this is his sister, who was also saved from abortion with, her mom had taken the abortion pill. We had first met her mom back in 2019, we were connected with her, Atoria. We were at an event at Pro-Life San Francisco, because we became friends with the person who was leading it at the time. And they said, hey, do you want to have a table? A sidewalk counselor came up to us and said, hey, wow, this is a great resource. Do you guys, you know, have information I can take? And she told us about this woman named Atoria, who was, you know, just kind of had left like the sex worker industry, and she found herself pregnant and she was living in her car. And she was abandoned by the father of the baby. And, you know, basically everything just kind of fell apart. She lost her job. Everything just happened right when she found out she was pregnant. And so we reached out to her. We didn't hear back for a long time. We kept reaching out. And honestly, we felt like, gosh, she probably just had this abortion. You know, she never got back to us. But then one day we got a message from her, and she got back to us, and we started talking to her. And she decided to accept our help. So we went ahead, she needed a place to live, but that was going to be, you know, something that we worked on with her a little bit later. But immediately she needed food. She needed, you know, so we sent her a Walmart gift card. And we thought, oh my gosh, we have this in the bag. Like, we're able to help this mom, you know, easy peasy. She's going to accept our help. Heck yeah. But she soon, she was really battling a lot of depression. She soon kind of went back into that. And she told us that she couldn't do it. She was going to send the gift card back. And at this point, she was about 19 weeks pregnant. So she had actually scheduled a 2-day abortion procedure and she was going to go through with it. Like, she was dead set on it. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I will never forget it. We were actually at the dog park, the things you remember, you know, and my heart just sank. And immediately I was like, we have got to go, Nathan. We've got to figure something out. So Nathan was texting her and saying, please just give us a chance. Like, please don't do this. Like, let us just try to help you. And we just told her we're flying to her. So we ended up booking the next flight out. We flew to California and we were like, we're here. Please just meet with us. We got her a hotel room so that she didn't have to sleep in her car. And it was that moment that she was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to have this baby. And so she canceled that 2-day abortion and she didn't go through with it. But there were so many times that she almost did. And we actually filmed a documentary of her because she tells her story better than anyone. But it's on our YouTube and it's amazing. And she gave birth March 2nd, 2020. And Nathan and I were there at the hospital. And we got to meet baby Kiari, who I said is about to be 4 years old in March. And it is so crazy because there were so many, everything was stacked against us, you know, mental health, abortion, the pressure, the financial, the lack of support, everything. But somehow we were able to save this life. And it was the hardest, one of the hardest situations we've had to deal with ever. And so Nathan and I personally counseled her, and that was when we first started Let Them Live. And so to see the babies, and earlier this year, she was at our house and there was a couple of Let Them Live babies who were all playing with each other. And I just like took a step back and I started crying because to see these kids who are the same age, you know, become friends and to know that they have a story now, it's honestly something that could just never, I don't know, it could just never get any better than that. So it was really impactful, but we've certainly had our fair share of really tough situations. And again, that's why we have these pictures on the wall, because it's just a reminder of the beauty. And I have to give credit to the moms because they accept our help. They push through. They're the ones that are really strong and holding on in there and giving their babies a chance.
I love that. That is an amazing story. And I do remember hearing this. I definitely will also link the documentary in the show notes. And I think one of the things that I really like about Let Them Live just in general is how like boots on the ground, especially from this story, how boots on the ground you are. Cause I think that there's so many of us who want to, you know, we want to do it. We want to be those fighters for life. And sometimes you have to actually like go and do it. And you can't, you just can't sit back. You have to sometimes go and do it. That's how the change is going to happen. And I think that's, I mean, that's amazing that your guys are able to do that. Can you give an example? Can you give an example of when a time just didn't work out and you had to kind of, you know, release it to God?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's been so many, because at the end of the day, this work has taught me that I can only do so much. And it's just the thing I've learned, a life lesson, like as humans, as people, we can only do so much and God has to do the rest. Or, you know, I can't force a mom to accept our help. All I can do is say, hey, we're here for you. We love you. Here's what we can help you with. And then sometimes you just have to release it and pray and say, God, I just really hope that this mom, accepts our help. And that's been one of the hardest things, is just letting go of that control, because I'm someone that I like to tick off my boxes. I like to have everything organized, you know? And it's hard to let go of that control, especially when we know what we can do to help these moms. And so, you know, we've had situations where moms, you know, after offering them everything, they still decide to have an abortion. And there was a mom right at the beginning, you know, when Nathan and I were doing the pregnancy counseling and everything. And it was just everything I could offer. She had a, you know, something that she could fight it with. So it's like, oh, I can help you financially. Well, no, it's not finances. It's, you know, I don't want my body to change, or, you know, like all, it's just anything. There was just always like, an argument against it. And that was really hard for me because it just felt like I was powerless to help this mom, and nothing I could say would do it. And then I found out, I mean, she had messaged me and said she had the abortion, and that was the first time that that had happened that I had known of. And it was heart-wrenching. I had to take, I took a couple of days off of just like, I can't believe it, you know? And it was really hard to not blame myself, you know? And that's something I've learned, is just understanding that you do everything you can. And I'm happy that I went like through those emotions, because I'm able to help our counselor, our counselors, like go through that when it does happen. And I had another mom too, where I personally in person counseled her. She was actually at a pregnancy center. The pregnancy center called me and said, "Hey, can you come in? We've got this mom." And I was like, "Absolutely." So I pop in there. She and I talk for a couple of hours, and I really thought we were getting somewhere. She, you know, I was kind of meeting her needs. I was getting her going on health insurance and just, you know, going there. And she stopped talking to me. And then I heard from her a couple of days later, and she said, she asked me if I would pay for her abortion. And it was like, I just, what? I didn't even know what to say. I was sick. And I thought, gosh, did I say something that would have led her to believe that? Like, I don't, you know, I didn't do that. But somehow she, and I said, no, there's no way I can do that. But like, here's what I can do. And from that moment on, she's just like, you know, absolutely not. I'm just having this abortion. And so it's really hard when you are so close to helping a mom. And, you know, I've seen the pain that abortion brings on to women personally, you know, people in my life. And I just don't want that for any mom. So it's heartbreaking in many ways, you know, but again, I just have to give it to God. Any pregnancy counselors that are listening, they understand the pain of that. But really you have to give it to God and understand that if you're doing everything you can, that's all that you can do.
Yeah. And thankfully you have babies right behind you to remind you to keep going. About 900 lives have been saved. So that's probably, you know, after a while, it kind of, I'm sure, you know, you have to let it go, but you can also look back and be like, we've done so much. Yeah.
I need more wall space.
Yeah. Oh, love that. That's so beautiful. So another question I have on your social media. So first of all, pro-life, one of our biggest arguments, you don't care about the mom, and you guys are the exact antithesis of that. You guys help with bills, you help with counseling, you connect, you job. I mean, we heard all that you do. So it's always baffling to me on social media when you guys get a lot of pushback. I feel like I haven't seen it as much lately, but I do remember there was a time where I would look at the comments and I'm like, wow, do they know what they're commenting on?
Yeah, they probably not pass the vibe check sometimes.
Yeah, it's like shocking. I'm like, did you read what they're going to pay themselves? So what do you guys do kind of to like combat that? If someone's listening, they get a little bit of hate on their social media. What are some things you suggest to kind of just ignore it?
Well, the thing that I do, and a lot of people have different opinions on this, and you can always, you know, inform and educate and politely, you know, respond. I would just say, don't get caught up in crazy debates. There's the reality that people are, you know, you're not going to be able to please everybody. You're not going to be able to get everyone to agree with you. And you know what I do is I just understand that there's going to be comments like that. And, you know, we have an amazing team that responds to people and we just clarify. But, you know, I've never found it a good use of my time to just constantly battle with people that probably just won't get it. And that's okay. So I just go back to work. You know, I just go back to it and I just say, okay, I'm just going to keep doing what we do, because I know that it's working. I know that these women are grateful that they're being supported and that they have their babies. And I serve them, right? I don't serve Joe Schmo on the internet who,
right,
you know, says whatever. And we get comments from everybody. We get comments from pro-choice people. We get comments from pro-life people that aren't great. We get all everything under the sun. And again, like I said, what I've learned in just the last 5 years is you can't please everybody. Just focus on the work, and get it done. And it speaks for itself, you know? So, and yeah. We truly love women. And our moms would say that, you know, they would say that for sure.
Wow. I love It Speaks for Itself. And that's the truth. Like, sometimes you just let people talk and your actions speak for themselves.
100%.
So we're going to shift gears a little bit. I want to ask you this question because I saw this on Instagram and I've never really seen anything like this. And I just think it's very interesting. And I really want to know. So for those who do not know, Emily and her husband adopted embryos that were frozen through IVF. And before we continue this, anyone listening, just be open-minded to what we have to say. I'm not making a stance either way, but I do want to hear about this because this is something that's unique. And I think as pro-lifers, when we kind of want to be holistically pro-life, I think this is a conversation that needs to be had. So I just want to add that. So anyway, you guys adopted some embryos. Can you kind of talk about like that process and like why you did that?
Yeah. I'm super glad that you brought it up. And I will just preface this by saying, like, I get that this is super weird. So like, that's not a question. I'm not offended by anybody saying that, because it is, it's like sometimes it feels weird and sci-fi-y in a way, you know?
Yeah.
And it is crazy. I will preface this by saying, you know, I studied biology in college. I've got a scientific mind. I love science, but I also understand that we can abuse it. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that go wrong with science. And I think there's a lot of things I disagree with. And so, you know, I'll put that out there. I'll also put out there that I don't agree with IVF. I don't believe it's okay to create, you know, all these embryos, especially when there's so many already frozen. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of issues with IVF as far as, selecting certain embryos that are the perfect embryo and all of that. So there's a lot of issues with IVF for sure. It's so crazy. So about 2.5 years ago, we found out, we really were like, well, we should be pregnant by now, you know, found out that I have, my fallopian tubes are like super, super tiny, extra tiny, and they're blocked. And so literally we just can't physically get pregnant, but I can get pregnant right through, like an embryo transfer, for example. And, so we were feeling pretty down about the infertility stuff. And my mother-in-law had heard on the radio through Focus on the Family about an organization called Nightlight Christian Adoptions and their Snowflakes program. So we actually got a little tattoo, a little snowflake tattoo.
Oh, cute.
And snowflakes because they're, you know, frozen. And it's all about people that have created embryos through IVF that are no longer doing IVF or going to transfer those embryos. And at this point, at the point in time when an embryo is created, there's options. Okay. So you can keep that embryo frozen forever. It does cost money every month. And that's something, actually, we had some people reach out and they were like, we don't want to pay for our embryos anymore. And I was like, I'll pay for them. I'll pay for the store. You know, we'll figure it out because you can't just destroy them. So that's the other option, is to just discard the embryos, which is super unethical because these are human beings we're talking about.
Yeah.
The third option is to give them up for adoption. And the typical term is like embryo donation, but when we put adoption with it, it humanizes them. And that's kind of the whole thing. And so for me, the way I look at it is I see that these embryos are already created. They were already made. And the first 15 embryos that we adopted, they were created in 1995. So the same year that I was born.
Oh, so that's like a mind. Wow.
Super weird. Like I said, super sci-fi, kind of weird. Like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. And it's similar to the argument of, let's say you're helping a woman in crisis pregnancy, right? She's already pregnant. So comments like she should have kept her legs closed, super unhelpful, right? Because that human already exists. So it's like, what do we do now? That's how I view it with the embryos too. They already exist. What do we do now? Do we keep them frozen forever? Do we discard them? Or do we do embryo adoption? And for Nathan and I, we felt of all three, the most ethical option was to give them a chance, right? They didn't choose to be created and then frozen. And I believe that they have the same value that you and I do, which some people think is crazy. That's fine. They're human. I'm human. We got the same value, whether or not I'm, you know, this tiny or 28 years old. And so We believe that the best option is to give them a chance. And that's all that we can do, is give them a chance. So we went through the whole process and we adopted the 15, and we had to do background check, you know, all the stuff that you would do for an adoption. I started on hormones, injections and pills and patches and all that stuff. Oh, wow. And prepared my body for essentially what is an IVF transfer. So we didn't ourselves, you know, create the embryos, but we're doing kind of the second half of the IVF process. Worked with Snowflakes. Nathan and I actually joined their Open Hearts program, which is the program not a lot of people join, actually. I think we're like one of a couple, maybe. But we basically told them, like, please let us adopt the embryos that no one else is adopting for whatever reason. It could be genetic anomalies. It could be that they're older. It could be that there's so many of them in one family, but we want to adopt the embryos that no one else is adopting that have been waiting. Wow. So we did that. We adopted the 15. And unfortunately, when they thawed them, 10 immediately died. They didn't make it. And then three of them, they kind of waited to see if they would continue growing, and they didn't. And then we transferred two embryos. So I was pregnant for just a brief moment with two sweet little humans. We took a pregnancy test, and unfortunately it came back negative. So we lost all 15. But I will say that they were loved. They are named. There is not a day that I don't think about them, and even tear up thinking about, you know, like, gosh, what would they have looked like, you know, because these are humans. But we took a little break and we prayed about it. And we actually just adopted 10 more, and we're starting that process. In January. So we're going to start the hormones and all of that back up. It's just something I encourage people to look into. Like you said, it's kind of a newer thing and not a lot of people have an opinion on it yet, but for me, you know, we could get my tubes unblocked and clear, but it's more important to me that these human beings get a chance at life than I reproduce my own genetic children. I think it's the more selfless route, and I think it's important that people know about embryo adoption before they do IVF. It's not to encourage IVF so that people like me can adopt. I'd rather that there be no embryos frozen or created. But it's to help couples who are considering doing IVF to pause and think, maybe I shouldn't create my own embryos. Maybe there are embryos that are already created that deserve a chance. So that's kind of what it's all about. I encourage people to look into it because we're so open with it. We've had people reach out to Snowflakes and start their embryo adoption journey as well. Yeah. But I think, you know, I'm always open to questions, and I understand people have different, you know, beliefs on it, but like you said, it's a good thing to talk about and just get out in the open.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being so open and sharing your story. I think, like you said, it's really important, and even people who listen to this podcast might even reach out and want to do it as well. This is the whole, the deeper or the more I've researched being pro-life and gotten to learn more, I've learned more about IVF and surrogacy and all these things. And my opinions have definitely changed over the years. And I think part of that is, though, is just being open to talk about it. And I really appreciate you being able to do that.
Totally. Yeah. Like I said, I'm super open. It's weird. So I get that, you know, I get people are like, what the heck is this? You know, I get it. So,
I mean, it's so, and like, not to harp in on it, but like, even thinking about like, so I was born in 1994. So I cannot even imagine, like, that person is technically like my age.
Yeah.
And I would be birthing them. That's so, it's so crazy.
It was a weird mind warp for me. Yeah.
But I mean, thank you for being so open to do that. Cause yeah. I do think, like, even if IVF were to stop today, there would still be all these embryos, and we can't discard them. That can't be, they're humans. We can't discard them. So the only other option would be to adopt them out to families that are willing. And I also think it's very important. You made the comment about 10 of them died when they were unthawed. I wonder if people know that, like, you can, you know, have 15 and then not all of them live. I think sometimes people think, oh, it's just so simple. You go, you do it, and then you have your 15 children, or like have right. your 10 children that you did. But it's not like that. It's, you know, right. a lot of it doesn't work. And I think that's yeah. And people spend so much money on it too.
People spend so much money, and that's a consideration for anyone, you know, listening that may be considering IVF. It's like there's so many that are already created, and it raises ethical questions of, because it's not a higher rate of success, like, is it ethical to create embryo? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's, that's kind of where, for me, the ethical questions lie, not so much in, you know, they're already created, let's give them a chance, but hey, like, let's stop creating embryos. You know, I had a conversation with a family member, and they were talking about how they went through IVF, and it was such a weird conversation because on her end, it was so casual. And I think I was just like, what did you just say to me? But she's saying that, you know, they created all these embryos, and they had some of them, they did genetic testing, and they just weren't good quality, or they had a gene. And so we just got rid of them. And I was like, do you realize what you just said? Like, these are humans. Yeah. So I think it's important to talk about embryo adoption because it also helps people to humanize and educate yes. that they are human beings. They're not just cells to just be thrown out, you know?
Yeah. And people are so detached. I think that's probably the biggest thing. People are just really detached. They just see it as just something different because at the beginning, it's not in your body. You've already put so much money. It's more of like a commodity almost, or like a bag, a lipstick, as opposed to like an actual human. So thank you again so much for sharing that. So switching gears back to Let Them Live, the last, second to last question I want to ask is, you have a book that has come out. Can you tell us about this book? What should we expect? How do we get it?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. So we have a book, like you said, and it's called Let Them Live, How Saving One Life from Abortion Sparked a Movement. And it talks about, you know, how we started Let Them Live. And it's a pretty small book. So it's not like you're going to, you know, it's going to take days to read or anything like that. So it's a pretty easy read. And it's just the feedback I've gotten is that it's a very just real and raw account of how we started Let Them Live, things that were going on in our life when we started Let Them Live. And our hope is to really just reach people. I mean, Nathan and I are pretty much just like, you get what you see, right? We're just kind of people like that. We kind of bootstrap things, and we're very real and open about our life. And we want other pro-life people to understand that we're not, you know, they can do that too. And there's struggles. And Let Them Live became a huge success, which is so amazing. Thank you, God, for that. But there were struggles along the way, both in Let Them Live and our personal lives. And sometimes life just sucks and you got to get through. And it's really just supposed to relate to people. And like I said, that's the feedback we've gotten, is that it just really relates to people in different ways. You know, I have issues with my family, and we talk about that in there and how that also affected Let Them Live, and just how, you know, Nathan became a Christian recently and his journey. And, you know, we're just so open about it. And so I think it's a really good read if anyone's, you know, just wanting to get into the pro-life movement, or maybe you just feel stuck. Like, I get it. I've been there. I was just there a couple weeks ago. I felt just like I couldn't get productive, you know? So just an encouragement for people and a story about how it all started. And right now we're about to get it up on, you know, like Barnes and Noble and Amazon, not quite there yet, but anyone can just reach out to us on social media or email us or whatever and ask for a copy. We just ask for a donation, online, but we'll make sure to get you guys one, as well. So it's a good read. I mean, obviously I'm biased, but, from all the people I've heard from and all the feedback I've gotten, it's been really good. So
that's good. And I think that it's also really good to hear stories. You seem like a very regular person, like you're normal. So I think it's good to hear stories of people who do that and then go on to do extraordinary things. Cause Let Them Live is an extraordinary, organization. I mean, 900, that's number is still in my head, like 900 babies. That's a lot of babies.
I think wild. I mean, we literally started our life living in a fifth wheel travel trailer in the back of Nathan's family's business. That's where we started Let Them Live. And I thought, gosh, maybe we'll just help a couple moms. So it's like, I'm on this roller coaster with everybody else. That's like mind blown. I'm right there too. I'm like, how the heck, you know? So
wow.
Anybody can do it, but we have to answer God's call and say yes.
Yeah. Love that. Last final question. and we ask this question to everyone, every guest. If every single girl in the entire world was looking at you right now, what advice would you give them?
Oh, I feel like I would give everyone a hug. First, I'd give everyone a hug. And I would also just say to be confident. I think that, you know, it can be so hard to be a girl, to be a woman, for sure. Especially in a time like we live in right now, where no one knows what a woman is, you know, and it's crazy. And I think it's important to just know your identity in Christ, know that you are valuable and you're worthy, and that worth doesn't change, depending on the day or anything like that. And to just have that confidence, and remember just how special you are. Like you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, women are so special. I mean, quite literally, we were made to bring life into this world. And that is like the coolest gift ever. I mean, women can, my mom would always say, like, I brought you into this world, I can take you out, you know, like, we literally bring life into this world. And Jesus came into this world as a baby. And because Mary was pregnant with him, she said, yes. That's how the Savior of the world came into the world, because Mary had him. And I think that just speaks to the beauty of womanhood. And I think, you know, every girl should just know their worth and their value, and have the confidence and go out there and make that change and be a positive role model for other girls, you know, and just be yourselves, because that's worked out for me really well. Just be yourself. And it's going to be all right.
Oh, love that. That's great advice. Thank you so much for coming on. I think this is a great episode. Everyone, make sure you are following Let Them Live. You can follow them on Instagram, TikTok. I'll link all of this to everybody. And they have a website. And, you know, if you feel called, get involved. Become a monthly subscriber. Become a monthly donator. However, you know, you feel led to do this. I think that this is definitely an episode that you should share with all of your friends, especially people who are pro-life and they just want to know other ways that they can get involved or want to learn a little bit more. Because we've all seen Let Them Live, and I think some people just don't know the full story. So I think it'd be really, this is a great episode to show them. And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you rate, like, review, subscribe, however you're listening. And let us know why you're pro-life in the comments. I'm trying to think of any other, I'll think of something else too. Let us know in the comments though. Is there anything else you want to add, Emily?
No, just thank you so much for having me, and thank you everyone for supporting us. You know, we're 100% donor funded and supported, and we also love our interns and our volunteers. So there's so many ways to get involved, and I just hope that everyone does, you know, there is a way to help, and there are ways to save lives from abortion. It's not as unreachable. So just get involved. Thank you for having this podcast and having me on.
Oh, thank you. You guys have a great day, night, evening, however you're listening. Bye.